Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of EdgeGuard Podcast, a podcast where we take a closer look at games on the fringe. My name is Jordan. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and good friend, Blake.
Hey.
And Blake is with me today for this long-awaited episode of the podcast. Too long. We got a little behind in our schedule, kind of busy in life, and more importantly, we've just been kind of talking about some changes we want to make to the format of the podcast. We're going to continue with the every other week format, but we're going to be changing the structure of the episodes a little bit and adding some kind of recurring segments to the episodes. So we apologize for the lull in your regularly scheduled programming. That'll be back to normal with this episode.
We'll be back to an actual regular schedule instead of, we'll do one every couple of weeks or something.
Yes, now it will continue to be every other week, but it will be consistent. And because it's that time of year, the next episode, 2 weeks from now, will be the annual Edgy Awards. So we're going to be doing that in a couple weeks. We'll come up with some categories, and we'll be giving out awards for various categories of best game that we played for the podcast in the past year. And we'll talk a little bit about how the podcast will be changing when we do that. So look out for that. I think we're excited about the changes we're making. So we hope you feel the same way, but we'll have more to say about that next time. For this episode, this is just going to be a standard episode about a game by the name of Alien Death Mob.
Alien Death Mob.
Yes, Blake was hired to do the voiceover for this game.
Alien Death Mob. That was my Halo announcer voice impression.
You know,
Slayer.
Not bad.
Kilimanjaro.
And okay. Now it's gone too far. Just kidding. So this game is designed by Pug Fugly Games, which is a studio of one, but they don't have their name listed on any of their social media or websites.
It's in the credits of the game, ding dong. Chris Roper.
Chris Roper. Blake is a more attentive player than I. It's funny that you looked at the credits. You didn't even finish it. I finished it.
So
I beat the last level.
Ooh, I'm Jordan. I beat the last level. Blah, blah, blah. At least I know who made the damn thing, you know?
Okay. So Chris Roper made this game, Alien Death Mob, which is a sort of arcade style bullet hell about being a little space marine type dude shooting lasers and other weapons at a visually overwhelming mass of mob of aliens. Uh-huh. It's a twin stick shooter. Although I tried playing it both on gamepad and mouse and keyboard, and as with many things, I found aiming way easier with mouse and keyboard and moving way easier with gamepad, and I could not decide which one I preferred. I ended up finishing with mouse and keyboard. But I think that perhaps it felt easier only because I was getting better at the game, not actually because that was the preferred method. But I'm curious what you did.
I mean, I play the vast majority of games on a gamepad, so yeah,
I figured
did the same. And I feel like twin stick shooter stick is
yeah,
in
you
the
need
name.
Two sticks. But I just found that I was getting so overwhelmed by enemies, and the lag on my bullets was enough that I actually needed to be aiming in order to not die.
I mean, you probably could do a hybrid approach where you've got like a controller in the left hand on a stick and a
mouse. Honestly, that's not a bad idea. You know, I probably could. I'm
about to try that right now.
I'm testing it out right now, holding it in one hand and moving my mouse around. It actually doesn't feel terrible.
I'm going to see if it lets me play the game. This is really exciting for viewers.
Sometimes I feel like sometimes games get confused when you have
two
input sources. But I guess because it does, whenever you move the mouse,
it immediately crashed.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Holy shit. That is awesome.
That's so funny. Because it does, whenever you move the mouse around, it does create a little crosshair. So I imagine it is trying to be responsive to only one input channel at a time. So maybe like if you're doing both of them, it's like changing some variable over and over again at rapid speed.
I did it again just to confirm, and yeah, it like you can start moving around with the stick and you can move the mouse, but the second you click it just crashes. So
that's so funny.
We should file a bug report to Chris.
Well, sorry, you want to know one reason that maybe is the way you shoot is very different in the two, right? You shoot by aiming in the...
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's very different, but I do think it's funny that you not only can you not do it, but the game just falls apart.
Well, I guess in mouse and keyboard, it's possible to aim without shooting. In twin stick, it's not. Not
although that,
that matters in this game. When would valuable? You ever stop shooting? No, it's not.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure, but is it possible to blow up power-ups by shooting them? A few times, power-ups were vanishing, and it was not clear to me what was causing them to vanish.
They go away after a certain amount of time.
Really felt like I was shooting them sometimes, but perhaps that was my gamer frustration brain filling in the cracks.
Yeah, I think so. So yeah, this game is mechanically extremely simple. You move, you shoot. I think where you get most of the mileage of this game is that there are a lot of levels and a lot of enemies. And I don't just mean like the number of enemies on the screen is a lot, because that is certainly true, but also just the number of different enemy types.
Yeah,
is
it's like kind of remarkable. Dozens. By the end of the game, you don't really, you're still like running into new ones. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I think with a lot of games, they kind of action games, I guess, they sort of like focus on having like, I don't know, think of like Doom, of like orthogonally designed enemies, where it's like, all right, each enemy, there are only like 12 enemies, but each one of them is a very distinct. Yeah, you fight them very differently. They look very differently different. And this game is kind of like, it goes with a more, I don't know exactly, a more broad approach, I guess. And then the differences between each enemy are not necessarily super high. Usually it has to do with like, okay, what do they run at you, or do they shoot a projectile? Do they like chase you down really quickly, or do they kind of like wander around near you? Do they stay clumped together in big groups, or do they kind of spread out a little more? If they shoot projectiles, how many do they shoot? How fast do the projectiles move? And so it's not a game where I feel like each enemy type has a very distinct identity. But I think the levels have distinct identities, not only because of the layouts and the looks of them, but also because they each have sort of a set of enemies that they use. So it's a wave-based game. So there's usually like 3 to 5 waves, I think, of enemies. And each wave usually will have different types of enemies in different numbers. And each level kind of has its own set of enemies that it uses, and sometimes different combinations, because usually there's some combination of little run-aroundy enemies that come at you, and then bigger enemies mm-hmm. that you have to hit more times, that are sort of stationary or move very slowly and shoot more projectiles at you. But I thought it was interesting that they get mileage out of, or they make the game feel... like it has a lot of variety by literally just having a shitload of different things. I think normally that kind of approach can kind of come off as like not very well thought out or something, but I didn't really feel like that in this game. I felt like even though there were a billion different kinds of enemies, and I couldn't necessarily point to you at like, there's this guy and he does exactly this, and this is how you kill him. It still feels different in practice, and I think it's sort of thematically it fits with the idea of just like alien death mob. They're just like a shitload of these aliens coming at you.
I thought the word
don't have time to stop and think about
it's just
which
literally
one is
a, like undulating mass of of creatures. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it's you know, you sort of pick up very minor things about a few of them, like, oh, these big goop guys are gonna split when I shoot them, or
right,
oh, these guys chase me, these guys don't. But yeah, for the most part, you're you know, there's so many enemies that you're not like, it's not like you know, you're seeing one and being like, ah, I know exactly the strategy for this one.
Right. Yeah, it's a little bit broader than that. And also, the idea that you would be able to think very much about strategy in this game is kind of comical with just the amount yeah. of stuff going on. I was kind of surprised, like, booting up the first level. Like, I was getting my ass handed to me for
yeah, I thought a solid it was amount of super time. Hard. I will say, I think this game could use a tutorial. I had to, you know, just the simple things like, here are the controls. Shields are good. You should care about points, and you unlock new levels by getting stars. Like, those, just right. getting those details would have saved mm-hmm. the first 15 minutes of this game quite a lot of headache.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I think the bigger difference is just that, like, I was having a hard time trying to figure out how to engage the game. Like, I didn't really know what to do to be successful at first, and I still don't really. Partially, I feel like that's because I am not really a bullet hell player, like a person sure. that plays bullet hell games, which just is, I think it would still probably be considered bullet hell. It's not sort of the traditional bullet hell where it's like fixed shooting patterns, although there is a lot of that. But in general, the amount of stuff on the screen, something about my brain, I just can't handle it. And early on, I was having a really hard time just like, where the hell am I? Where the hell are things that are coming at me? And I actually, actually do think that it depended a lot on the level of this game. Like, some of the levels I felt like, oh yeah, this is great. And other levels I was like, wow, I am bad at this game. And sometimes I just honestly think it was like the color of the environment made it harder to read what was going on some of the levels.
Yeah, so that was something I wanted to bring up, which is that I thought that there were some highs and lows to this game. I thought that the highs, I was having a great time. But I found that actually the first level was one of my least favorite because especially early on, before you're just used to the sort of pixel graphics, it's very hard to tell what is an obstacle, what is the ground, what is an enemy, right. and what is a projectile. And so right. I just was getting really confused visually. And some of that is because it's new and you just aren't used to, you know, you haven't learned the game yet. But I did feel like the first level, just in its color scheme, it was confusing. And then also, I think that in almost every level, the buildings, they just don't look very solid. They just blend. They look like flat things. Mm-hmm. And you take some getting used to realize that these are like, you know,
things you're going to bonk into,
things that will block you and block projectiles.
Yeah.
So I found that a little tricky early on. I do want to say although there were times when I felt like this game was so busy that I, you know, it felt like luck. Like, you know, if a shield pops up, great, I'm going to win. If it doesn't, I'm boned. I do think the designer had some really clever little things that they did to make it more to give the player a bit of an edge on trying to digest all the stimulus that they're getting. So the biggest one, which I really liked, was the automatic slowdown when an obstacle gets close to you. I thought that was really clever and really well done. It takes a little bit of getting used to, but basically what happens is anytime an enemy or a enemy projectile gets within some small amount of distance from you, the game time will slow down, making it easier for you to dodge it. And I thought that it feels super cool. It gives you, it just feels empowering as a player. Like, you're doing like Matrix dodges type type thing, and it makes it feel much less unfair that there's, you know, yeah,
totally,
every inch of the screen is covered in things you can't touch. So I thought that was great. I thought that was a really good addition.
Yeah, yeah, I think I totally agree. The concept, I think, is really awesome, and I also like that it's not like a deployable, like a resource. It's just something that you always have. Because for someone like me who struggles with you know, sort of a bullet hell type game, having a little bit of an assist, super nice. And also, yeah, you do have those really awesome moments where you know, time slows down, you're like, oh shit, I gotta see if I can shoot the gap and like squeeze between two bullets and run through. And like, yeah, it feels really awesome when you know, make it through, like you said, Matrix like. So yeah, that was definitely my favorite like unique thing about this game, that I could think of.
Yeah, I think I would agree. There are a couple other things in a similar category, not as sort of flashy, but I thought that the edge of the screen indicators, they had white ones for enemies, and then a little green P for power-ups, and a little flashy rainbow thing for score multipliers. I thought those were really elegant, pretty simple, but I think they did just a great job of, you know, similar thing of just kind of helping you digest the sheer amount of information in the level. So I thought that was really good. And I might have had, I'm trying to think if there's another one I had. One that was kind of good, but I felt like could be better is the, I found myself expecting my shield to last longer than it did. So it, I noticed that the shield does blink as it's about to run out, but I think something a little more, you know, if you're running through enemies, you won't see the blinking. So
yeah,
I found that one easy to lose track of, but I did notice that there was a little something.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about the levels a little bit, because there are a shitload of them, way more than I thought. I mean, there's got to be damn near 50, like 40 or 50 of them, right? There's just a bunch.
I think it's 53, which is confusing because it says, although that doesn't make sense because there's
53 can't be right because
it's rows of five. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it says,
I'm gonna say there are 50. That's my theory.
I could have sworn I saw that. Maybe I was seeing you need 53 stars to unlock level 50. Maybe that's what I was seeing. I guess that would make sense.
Well, someone on the Steam page has posted every level with 5 stars and they have 150. So I guess there are only 30. Felt like more, but I guess maybe that's right.
Yeah, it does say 30 on the page. I think the 53 must have been the stars required for the final level. And I was just mistakenly thinking it was 1 star per level, but obviously not, because they were rows of
five. Right. Anyway, as I was talking about with the levels, the levels are sort of, each one is themed after a country, and it kind of moves around the continent, or the continents, rather, you know, with 5 countries from each continent, and then you know, the next row down is another continent.
Yeah.
See, then that's why I think that there should be 35, you know, seven. But I guess Antarctica, I guess Antarctica makes sense.
Oh, that is why there's 6 per continent.
Yeah.
All
right.
Oh, wow.
Right.
This all right. Really, or 5 per continent for 6 continents. This makes total sense. Yeah. It starts in Europe, then Africa, Asia, then like Australia/Oceania. And
yeah,
then yeah. South America, North America.
Yep. But anyway, I think the levels are pretty good. I think they feel different, not only because each one usually will feature some sort of like country specific landmark. So like the first level, France, has the Eiffel Tower. The America one has the Statue of Liberty. But they also like just have the buildings sort of are trying to mimic the architecture of the place they're from and the color scheme often. But I think they get a lot of variety out of just like the way that structures are arrayed. Like Some of them are like cities with a bunch of big tall buildings that you got to weave around. Mm-hmm. Some of them are like Russia is just like a big empty field with like, you know, five or six little buildings in it.
And then Chile is Easter Island heads.
Oh, incredible. One of them has like these rows of like little houses. I think it's like Sweden or something. And it adds kind of a fun dynamic of like weaving through these buildings, and like they're in rows where you can't go between them, but you can go through the rows, but you can't go between the individual buildings. So that creates, you know, kind of a fun way to funnel the enemies and give yourself some space. And so again, I think similar to the enemy design, I think it's kind of a testament that they can get this much variation out mm-hmm. of something that's, you know, all told pretty simple.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cool. I think some of them go over better than others, but yeah, overall I thought the fact that they can feel so different was neat.
Did you feel like the difficulty level was like all over the place? I found like there was some levels. Totally. There was one level that I five-starred on the first try, and that was crazy because I don't think I had gotten 5 stars even once.
I had a similar experience,
and so I was like what is the difference here? And I think it has to do with the probably the enemy types is a bigger deal than the level itself.
Yeah,
but I remember that level being one that had a lot of projectile enemies and a lot of barricade, like buildings,
stuff to bonk into.
So it was really easy to kind of fight them a few at a time and just not get overwhelmed. Whereas the hardest ones were ones that had a lot of obstacles or bridges, and a ton of non-projectile enemies, because it's just like you could just get blocked in a corner.
At you so much faster too. I feel
it's easier to dodge projectiles than the units, because projectiles don't chase you. So
right. Yeah, that's totally true. I would say that's the same thing. That's why I thought it was interesting that the first level was just basically all clusters of melee enemies running at you. Mm-hmm. It was really hard. I was like, damn, it was really this hard. Is the first level, I am fucked. Like,
I had I'm the same impression, but then, you know, it ends up being okay. But level one really is like, sorry, you're not pulling any punches.
Yeah. And then I do think it might have been helpful if like at least the first row were, you know, consistently easy. On the easy side. I think especially having the very first level be like relatively tough was a little discouraging, but overall I really appreciated the variety. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the weapons, all the different weapons? Do you have a favorite? Oh man,
so much variation in quality. There were a couple of them that I thought was worse than my default one, but for the, you know, vast majority were
that
better.
Really slow one that shoots the bubbles, I feel like it's really good in certain situations and trash in other situations. Yeah,
so it's kind of like there's different projectile types, and then you can get a different number of streams of them. So I found that some of them were okay if you had a good number of streams, but then sucked if you only got one. The one that I thought was just awful was the single rocket, because it shoots so irregularly. It's okay if you're fighting huge clustered mobs because it does AOE damage, but if you're not, it's just like, oh god, I want my regular weapon back. One that I was always happy to see in all circumstances was the thickest of the lasers, like the straight continuous beams. I thought that one was...
By thickest, do you mean the one that shoots three in a cone?
Well, I don't know how to... There's a green one and a blue one, and it seemed like the green one, the beam itself was thicker. And it did... it did more damage. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I know the single beam laser does higher damage, but the triple beam laser is like, you know, it's in a cone, so you get three beams.
Yeah, I just found it so good and so satisfying, because it's like you're holding the erase button on Microsoft Paint and just like erasing the enemies.
Yeah, I think I'll agree with you. That was those two were the ones that if I saw them, it's like I'm gonna get that one over anything else.
Yeah,
and another, yeah, I agree. I think the thing is that you can like pass over enemies and you're gonna hit them no matter what because it's a continuous beam.
Exactly.
Versus, you know,
I thought
discrete pellets.
What were other good ones? I thought that the, I mean, anytime you're getting up to five streams, it's usually good. Like the I did notice there were multiple different kinds of bubble ones, so I was kind of getting mixed up. But there was one of the bubble ones that they kind of seek.
And well, what they do is you continue to control them after they go out. So if you move the stick, they will move in the direction that you are aiming, even as they're, you know, on the other side of the screen. Oh, that was so another funny. One that I really liked. Yeah, if you get the, there's like a 3 version and a 5
and a
version.
5. Dude, the 5 one of that is
yeah. So good. Basically what I would do is I would shoot in a direction and then just kind of like feather the stick in a wave so that they're like snaking through the air and you could just wreck the bad guys.
That was super good.
Yeah.
I would say that one or the straight laser beam were my I would say that one was really good. That one was incredible against big enemies because you just like melt them, and then it was very good against everyone else. The beam I thought was just insane against swarms. It's just like
right
goodbye.
What about what's the worst one in your view? A missile, you think?
Maybe missile.
Missile's pretty not good.
I mean, I felt like most of the ones that had a gap between the noticeable gap between the projectiles were pretty bad because it was just hard to hit. So there was another one that was kind of like, it was like shooting these purple balls, or like they're kind of ovular shaped. That was, I thought was pretty bad. What about you? What do you think the worst one was?
Probably the missile. I think like the 3 missile one. Which one's the one that like shoots them in a T? It like shoots one straight ahead of you and 2 to the side.
No, there's two different. Like, there's multiple ones that do that because it's like,
oh god.
It seems to be
anytime it's doing that, I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
It's not
useful.
The only one that shot in every direction that I thought was good was the one that does 6. That one was nice because there's like just so many that you can't get surrounded.
Oh, right. I know which one you're talking
about. But I think almost any time it was a T, I was like, this sucks. Or I even once got one that was front and back. And I was like, this seems dumb.
That one I actually had some success with because if you kind of... if you aim, you could kind of aim so that you were running to the side. You're shooting at 90 degrees from the direction you're moving, and it's shooting out both sides, and it has a high firing rate. It's basically like the main, your basic weapon with slightly less damage, but 2 of them, and you could, so you could kind of shoot it out either side. I found that one could be useful in the right situation.
Gotcha.
I also liked the flamethrower. I think it was really only good for big groups, and it you really have to get up in their face, but man, you could do some work with that thing.
Yeah, the flamethrower was super good. I don't know. I haven't decided how I feel about this, but I felt like that the variation in quality of the power-ups felt very arcadey to me in the way that arcade games, I don't know if there's like a systematic way to put this, but just many arcade games have a lot of just randomness to them, because you know, of the sort of nature of an arcade. They want you to keep putting quarters in, and they want it to be, you know, it's a little bit like gambling. They want it to be like big highs and then a chance you just lose for no reason. and so I felt like I thought that it created that effect very well, because you know, there'd be some times when you're like, oh god, I'm gonna die, and then you get one of those really good power-ups right when you need it, and then you just like melt all the enemies, and there's nothing more satisfying than that. And I think that it feels less bullshit than in an actual arcade, because I don't have to put a quarter in if I lose. you know, it's if I just get a series of shitty power-ups, or like, you know, a series of not getting shielded when I needed to be shielded, it's like, oh, okay, I'm out of 2 minutes of my time. So it feels less like the game's cheating me. But yeah, I just thought that was interesting sort of design pattern.
Yeah, I think for me, it kind of harkens back to like Contra or something, where just like the varying levels of how good the power-ups are is like, you know, a fun element of like, well, is this going to be a power-up that I actually want to use, or am I going to avoid this power-up because it actually sucks? It's a power down.
I've been penalized. Maybe
objectively it's a power-up, but for me it's a power down because I can't use it effectively.
yeah, I think it's nice is it always drops two or three power-ups, so once you kind of know
you know them,
you can kind of pick. So I thought that was another way that the randomness felt less I assume it's random. I guess I don't actually know. I didn't replay very many of the levels. It could just
be... Oh, you didn't? Interesting.
A few of them, but most of them I didn't. I was replaying a fair bit in the first row, but then eventually, once I figured out how to get points, I found it pretty easy to always have some level that I hadn't tried.
Right.
For the most part.
Fair enough. Well, do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, so one other thought I had, I don't really know what you would do differently, but I found myself noticing that there's something kind of annoying about the fact that the shields are generally dropped by enemies. Because you want the shield when you are being swarmed by enemies, but you can't run in to get the shield when you kill an enemy. And then, in fact, you find yourself having to run away from the shield because there's a million enemies on top of it. So I thought that was a sort of weird... I don't know what else you would do. It'd be kind of weird if the shield just like spawned in front of you when you killed those enemies. So I don't really know, but I just... found myself noticing that several times where it's like seems weird that the game would be incentivizing me to run away from the shield.
Yeah, I agree, and I think with the power-ups at times they're appearing in a place where it's like, well, it would be great if I could get that because I need it because I'm overwhelmed, but I can't get it because the enemies are swarming all over it.
Yeah.
So there were a few times that it ended up feeling a little bit, I wouldn't say unfair, but it ended up feeling a little like, well, this sucks.
Yeah, but it's tricky because I don't know, you know, it's such a basic, like, you sort of have to pick. If you want the power-up to be linked to an enemy, then what else would you do? So,
yeah.
It's a tricky, bit of a tricky decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's all I had, unless you had any other final comments.
Nope, that's all I got.
All right, well then, let's talk about our episode next time, which I already mentioned. So we do the edgies usually in August or September. So it is time for us to be doing the edgies again. So next time you hear from us, we will be awarding unique awards. Every year we make up new award categories, so we'll be doing that again. So it should be a good time. It's always fun to kind of go back and have a bit of a retrospective session on everything we've done for the podcast in the last year. So we hope you will listen to that episode. So that'll be released on our Twitter account. So if you want an update when that happens, you should follow us at EdgeGuardCast. The Twitter account's where we do all the news for the podcast, new episodes, links to games we play, updates in the podcast itself, and also where you can message us if you have thoughts about games we've played or recommendations for games you'd like us to play. So We'd love to hear from you. Go ahead and follow us at EdgeCast, and we will talk to you next time.